Hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today, I am joined by me. Yes, I'm solo podcasting today, and we have a cornucopia of topics to move through. Before we dive in, I'm reminding you to click that subscribe button. It doesn't matter what platform you're on. If you're listening on Progressive Radio Network, if you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, if you're watching on Odyssey, if you're watching directly on Patreon, wherever you are, thank you for clicking the subscribe button, for liking, for sharing, for commenting. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at DannyKatz.com. Very best way that we can be sure to stay in touch. And just letting you guys know of some of my big picture visions. My goal is to get off of every platform and host everything on DannyKatz.com. Now, obviously, this is not happening anytime soon. It is going to be a process. And my intention is to get off Instagram, to get off Facebook, to get off YouTube, to get off Odyssey. I never post my full shows on YouTube because they have different rules for me than they have for the other content creators. And I'm about half a strike away from not having a channel. And I figured it's smarter for me to leave it up for trailers. My goal is to really get off of all of those and ultimately have one website where everything is hosted, all my videos, all my courses, my podcasts, et cetera, which is DannyKatz.com. I'm starting to make the transition now by starting to populate the blog with the writings that go out in my newsletters and the time sensitive announcements like the quantum languaging course that I'm starting teaching this coming Thursday, April 3rd. If you're watching this in real time, meaning you see it on April 2nd, there is still time to sign up for that course through Apocatastasis Institute. It is a 12-week college level, high school level, continuing adult level deep dive into the frequencies of language and how they are the building blocks of our every known shred of reality. So I'm starting to populate the blog on DannyKatz.com as a means of seeding the groundwork and getting you guys used to going to my website for everything. So all of this is to say it is best to sign up for my newsletter at DannyKatz.com. As well, in addition to this awesome course that I'm teaching live, my pop propaganda digital media literacy course that I created for homeschooled teens and is still appropriate for parents and grownups alike, the donation has been drastically slashed to make it all the easier for everyone to tune into this course. I made the executive decision to bring the donation down so that we could get this out to as many people as possible. The course breaks down all of the tools, techniques, and tricks the social engineers use to attempt to manipulate us, to co-opt our minds and our attention and our sovereignty, to pull their divide and rule shenanigans on us, as well as breaking down the co-opting of the media and how to do our own research, how to do our own fact-checking, how to follow the money. It is a phenomenal course. I taught it in 12 weeks. Because there was a final exam, which was having the students create their own propaganda campaigns. But it's so chock full, it can definitely be divided up into, you know, let's say a 22-week course if you want to divide each module in half. So wanted to alert you to the new, even greater affordability of that phenomenal course. There's nothing like it on this planet, I promise you. And actually, I created this book, Pop Propaganda, to go along with it as the textbook. So as you are interested, you can register through my website, DannyKatz.com, and you will get immediate lifetime access. All right, that does it for housekeeping. Let us dive into today's show. So my pattern of late has been to start with the social engineering report, the weaponization of customer service report, and then get into the languaging stuff. And because the cultural engineerings and the psyops that I'm going to be commenting on are a little bit more spicy, I am saving those today for the last half of the show, which will be available on both my Locals and Patreon communities for paid supporters. On both of those communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, including this one, plus oodles of bonus content. And we're starting with the languaging stuff today. I think Mercury is still retrograde. I think five or six planets are still retrograde. So it might be kind of all over the place. And I know you guys can roll with me. So let's do it. I'm just checking my notes. And okay. So I really want to focus on can't today and all of the different levels of hierarchical languaging upon which can't is operating. But before I dive into that, and before I dive into that, I just want to mention a quick text edit that I did this week, which was very illuminating for me in terms of transmuting outdated shadows. So part of what happened this week, which I will be going into in more detail in the second half of today's conversation, was a ton of drama that erupted this week among the health freedom community, the sovereignty exit and build community, around an alleged asset-controlled opposition propagandist being added as a speaker to an upcoming event. And we will bookmark that for the second half of the show. And there were a lot of text messages with the organizers of the event. And one of the accusations that was lobbed at me, not super directly, but directly enough, was in making definitive claims that people are controlled opposition, when in reality, I am fairly certain that they are controlled opposition, or it is my belief that they are, or they're certainly behaving like, or there are a lot of markers that would make it seem like they are acting as controlled opposition, right? And fair enough, you know, and I believe we've talked about this before, and I've got a quick tongue. Got a quick temper. I'm kind of fiery and kind of fast with most of my communications. And so, whereas when I'm in full-fledged journalism mode, I'm really going the distance to check all the facts, to dot the I's, cross the T's, metaphorically, to back all of my hunches and all of the patterns that I'm unpacking up with really solid evidence and research. And I haven't been doing that since I haven't been paid to be a journalist anymore. It takes a lot of time and energy and attention and effort simply to track the things that I'm tracking when I'm not wearing the journalist hat, right? When it's more like incendiary, truth teller, truth screamer, you know, whatever. Labels are always going to be reductive and fall short of describing what it is that I do. And, you know, even on these shows or the shows that I do with Emily, I'm often very quick to make declarative assessments that are based on hunches and pattern recognition, and that, when I'm being honest, don't have like solid evidence to back them up. And as I said, we're going to get deeper into this at the end of the show. So I was being called in on this, and I was being called in on this as a way of discounting the observations I was trying to share, but that weren't necessarily welcomed. And when I was called in on making definitive claims, it touched a nerve because it's something that I have a lot of ambivalence about as a journalist, knowing that I have in the past had a tendency to communicate things with this definitive knowingness in a way that would be sloppy as a journalist were I in journalist mode. And, you know, I kind of slip in and out. But I feel like at this point, since I'm not being paid by any publications or platforms to unpack these things, in the interest of time and energy and sanity, because I do so many things, 5-1 manifesting generator, juggling, you know, like multiple careers and projects at the same time. I trust my hunches and I put it out there. And sometimes my languaging around it is sloppy. Now, to be fair, that was just the wind. I was like, is Bigfoot upon us? To be fair, my track record is pretty astounding. And this is something that Emily and I, you know, has been with us throughout our 8 years together podcasting, where it's kind of astounding how often we're right. Our track record is amazing, and most of the times that it comes to pass that my hunches and what I'm conjecturing on are correct, I'm not happy about it. Like the little ego rush that comes with being right for me does not trump the horrifying terror of the globalist agenda coming to pass and inching closer and closer to realization, which, to be clear, I don't think is going to happen at all. They're weak. They are powerless. They are dependent upon lies, coercion, and censorship to push their shenanigans through. So I don't think that's going to happen. And yet, every time I'm proven right, it freaks me out because I do have that city of idealism sitting in my pearl sequence for all of my gene keys nerds, right? So that city of idealism, and when I say city, I'm not saying CITY, I'm saying CIDDHY, being the highest slash enlightenment frequency of, in this case, the 11th gene key, which moves us from the shadow of obscurity. The gift of ideal. Ooh, I'm wrong. It's the gift of idealism. It's not the city of idealism. All right, so clear, cancel, delete. The 11th gene key moves us from the shadow of obscurity to the gift frequency of idealism. And then it's light that is that highest siddic frequency. So because of how the pearl sphere is operating in terms of my own hologenetic profile, right? It guides quite a lot of my dharma, of the work that I came to this planet to do. I want to believe the best, right? And this is why last solo show I was talking about the liberation of the realization that a lot of people suck because it allowed me to temper that idealism with some actual discernment, which has saved me, since making this realization. Maybe 3.5, 4 months ago, it saved me from a lot of disappointment, expectations, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm never happy when I'm, seeing an op come to pass or seeing someone who's behaving like a Shiller-controlled opposition, and then, whatever the conjecture is proves itself to be true. That's not a win for me. That's like a bummer for humanity. Going back to the original point, so I was being called in on basically accusing someone of being controlled opposition without hard and fast evidence. Again, we'll bookmark the specifics. I'll get into it a little bit later. And it resonated. I was like, okay, that's a valuable reflection. And it's true. That is a rather kind of lazy, erroneous communication pattern that I'm still in the process of transmuting. And this brings me to the languaging upgrade. So this was all a text exchange. I did pick up the phone and try to have a regular phone conversation with this person, like a grown adult, and this person didn't answer the phone and instead opted to text me. Okay, it's 2025 Clown World Community Communications. Got it. I had typed in my response, yet it's true, I have a habit of rather incendiary speech wherein I quickly jump to unfounded conclusions based on hunches and research. But what I noticed before I hit the send button, and this is really the beauty of texting, this is the upside of texting when we're mastering quantum languaging or when we're mastering a language of betterarchy, is having the receipts on a screen to see the words, to see, oh, are these words that I've just typed out vibrating at any frequencies that are going to harmonize my being with frequency bands that I don't really want to be harmonizing with, right? Like, I have a habit. Do I want to carry that historical habit with me into the present moment, thereby seeding my future with more of that habit? No. Do I want to identify with this outdated habit by claiming it as part of me in the here and now? No, I don't want to do that. And so I made the edit of instead of I have a habit, I am still in the process of transmuting the habit. So what the benefits of this upgrade, first and foremost, are using the ing, right? All these gerunds, or sometimes they're reverse gerunds, They put things in motion, right? And this is something that David Bohm talks about in terms of Rheumode. I'm about halfway through Paul Levy's Quantum Revelation, the newly revised version, and he's talking about this as well, that fixity is a lie. Fixity is a fictional fallacy. It's not something that truly exists in this realm. It's one of the, fictions, errors in communication that tends to keep us stuck in fixed patterns just by way of fallacious communication. And so in switching it up to, I am still in the process of transmuting these outdated tendencies, I am reminding my subconscious mind, we're moving through this, right? This is something that we're not gonna hold on to. We're not gonna stay here. We're not gonna stick around. I'm in the process of letting this go. And at the same time, it allows me to take responsibility for the outdated and, you know, somewhat erroneous and reckless habit without stapling myself to it in such a way that it's like this albatross around my neck of this terrible, you know, bearable habit that's like ruining my communications, right? And can lend itself to like self-criticism, self-hatred, self-flagellation, all of those things. So I find just for myself, in terms of being kind and loving to myself, it feels so much better to say I'm still transmuting. And I'm also reminding myself, be more mindful with our communications. And so I encourage you and me and all of us, whenever we're talking about a habit, a behavior, a circumstance wherein we weren't showing up as the idealized versions of ourselves that we strive to be, to not get stuck with any fixity around the behavior, the habit, the pattern, whatever it was, by languaging it with any sort of static here and now languaging that would create like a quantum entanglement between ourselves and the habit, but instead to choose a verb that puts it in motion. I'm still transmuting. I'm still mastering my communication. I'm still letting go of some outdated incendiary and reckless communication patterns, right? So we have letting go, transmuting, still mastering, right? So I'm still mastering, then I'm gonna frame it in the positive. I'm still mastering responsible communication. So that felt better to me. And I find this for anyone who is doing their shadow work, which I certainly hope is all of us tuning in, these ing verbs, these reverse gerunds, are such a helpful way of taking responsibility for our shadows and really laying claim to them and shining the light of day onto them, but without cultivating any negative emotions around them, any shame, any embarrassment, right? It keeps the communication very clean. I kind of liken it, I'm just realizing this right now, like to ketamine, right? Maybe it's like a linguistic ketamine wherein the ing verbs allow us to see something in its, you know, maybe ugly totality, but allows us to dissociate from any negative emotions around it because we're not clinging to it. We're not claiming it in the present moment. We're acknowledging this present moment is fresh. And I can see up until this moment, yes, I sometimes was in the habit of doing that thing that I am right now in the process of transmuting, or right now I'm in the process of mastering, as I said, conscious, responsible communication. So I highly recommend playing with this, with any shadows you're currently in the process of transmuting or, you know, alchemizing into a different relationship. Noticing how different it feels inside your own body to not lay claim to them with any fixity. Yes, I have this pattern. Yes, I do this. And put it in the past and put it in motion with an ing and just notice. And please comment, you know, in this video, in this podcast, or reach out to me on social media, what have you. I'm really curious to know what differences you're noticing in just switching up the fixity and putting it in motion. And that was just a quick one. Full disclosure, I didn't fall in racquetball today. It's been such a Mercury retrograde racquetball week for me. 2 days ago, I got tripped up on my own feet and like went slamming down on both my knees, both my elbow. Oh, see, you could see it. For anyone watching, I have a boo-boo on my elbow. And then today, I was trying to pick up a ball off the wall and I slammed my face into the wall so hard and I bashed my nose, but I also bashed my special snaggletooth and it is still throbbing. And I'm so grateful that my tooth is so strong and so healthy that it could withstand such a hard smack and still be holding it down like the strong, badass snaggletooth that it is. Okay, so the next languaging piece that I want to dive into today is we're going to dive into the language of betterarchy because I did write about it. It is the word can't. And how the word can't is this like beautiful multitasker. And when I say beautiful, I'm definitely being sarcastic in terms of working against us on multiple different dimensions and in multiple different levels. So this was the context in which it took place. I was working with one of my coaching clients this week, and she was sharing a victory, which absolutely was a victory, wherein she was staying with some friends in a guest house, and she was staying there for a week, and the friends were inviting her to dinner every single night, and she wasn't feeling aligned with that consistent level of connection and socializing. And so, in standing her ground and asking for what she needed, which was more alone time, she said, "I just can't do, 7 dinners in a row." So, on the one hand, it was absolutely a triumph. And it's important that we acknowledge our triumphs in terms of her transmuting any outdated codependent tendencies that would have her showing up for dinner that she wasn't actually feeling aligned with showing up for. So, in that sense, it was truly a triumph. But on the other hand, the language that she was using to communicate her choice to have some more alone time, was activating some pretty deleterious tendencies, or excuse me, frequencies. And so instead of reinventing the wheel, I'm going to read to us from the Language of Betterarchy, which is available now in print, ebook, and audiobook from your favorite local bookseller. Although I will say, don't we have antitrust laws in this country? And why is Audible the only place where we can buy and listen to audiobooks? That is something that super annoys me. And if Trump were my next door neighbor, I would be knocking on his door and saying, "Hey, what about this Audible monopoly?" Because personally, I'm not down with the subscription model. It's an enslavement mechanism. It feeds into the debt economy. I just really, really am not a fan. And there are plenty of audiobooks that I would love to be listening to, and I can't even access. I just did it. See? Did you hear the can't? I can't even access them because I don't have an Audible account. So let's do the upgrade right now. I guess I can access them if I did have an Audible account and were aligned with that. But because I'm not aligned with Audible's business model, I'm not aligned with antitrust violating monopolies, I choose not to have an Audible account. And therefore, I guess I choose not to have access. That feels a little weird. I don't have access. Let's just keep it in the neutral, right? I don't need to victimize myself. I don't need to caveat it with if it's a choice or if it's a can't. I don't have access to listening to purchased audiobooks because I don't have an Audible account, right? We're gonna get deeper into what I just did right now. As for what is the solution to the audiobook if you don't have an Audible account, I don't have one. Maybe someone's pirated it. And if that's the case, good luck finding it. It's something that I look forward to society fixing and coming into right relationship with sometime soon. Okay, so reading from the Language of Betterarchy. Can't, so the chapter is can't slash have to. And I will get into why they're paired together in a moment. This is part of the victimhood chapter. We're going to be focusing on the victim languaging, the victimhood frequencies that are encoded in the can't. So here we go. Can't and have to are essentially two sides of the same disempowering coin. They both vibrate at similar frequencies of victimhood, and they both function to deny our own agency, which is why we are examining them in tandem here. Let's start with can't. Can't. As with most words, there are multiple uses of and applications for can't. Mostly, we use it to deny our competence and our agency while bowing to codependent relationship dynamics. From a connotation standpoint, can't refers to an actual inability to do something, whether that inability is steeped in physical, ideological, or psycho-emotional impediment, or in authoritarian constraint, evident, imminent, or implied. Regardless of its actual meaning, we often employ the word can't to get out of doing things we don't want to do without taking responsibility for the fact that we don't want to do them. And this is the specific instance of can't that we're talking about today. This well-intended, though thoroughly disempowering languaging habit enables our collective emotional retardation by assuming the folks we are turning down can't handle the rejection this erroneously misused word seeks to quell. Take, for example, the following statement. I can't go hiking with you today, Hannah. I have to work. Have to operates much the same way as can't does, except while can't implies inability, have to alleges to have zero agency in the situations it modifies. We'll delve deeper into the domineering frequencies encoded in have to in a bit. For now, though, let's stick with can't. When I say I can't go hiking, I am taking all of zero responsibility for my choice to go to work over hitting the trails with Hannah. It would be accurate were I a legless slave handcuffed to my desk. Alas, in the vast majority of instances, this isn't actually the case. When I say I can't go hiking, I have to work, I am victimizing myself to my job and denying my own agency in how I choose to allot my time and attention. The truth of the matter is that I am not a legless slave handcuffed to my desk, and I can go hiking with Hannah, though I am choosing to work instead. I choose to work because I like having a steady income, and I like being able to pay for the goods and services that enhance my life, be it regular body work and a pantry filled with superfoods, or simply shelter, running water, and the electricity necessary to run my laptop. Working is a choice I make in service to the lifestyle I have created for myself. Granted, there are aspects of me that would rather hike with Hannah than work, but when I language my choice to work instead of hike with can't, and then go the distance by pairing it with have to, I am disempowering myself to my job. The aspirated can't plus have to combination harmonizes my internal vibration with the frequency bands of victimhood, disempowering me to whatever it is I am claiming I can't or have to do. There's, for those who are watching with your eyes, there is a little illustration of a tooth brushing itself saying that I have to get my teeth cleaned. Okay. Remember, the frequency bands to which we attune ourselves most frequently determine the energies and experiences that characterize our lives. And so it is that can't and have to direct the universe to configure in service to our victimization and our disempowerment, ensuring that external agencies squelch our fun and our freedom on the regular. The same applies for the various can'ts and have to's the matrix attempts to impose upon us. I'm gonna skip a few paragraphs, and I'm taking us to can't and have to are codependent BS. That is the subsection. Oftentimes we employ can't when we don't want to do the thing we are attempting to forego. Again, this is what we're talking about today. Maybe I don't have to work, and I really can go hiking with Hannah, but I just don't want to. Maybe Hannah is needy and prone to gossiping and complains a lot and often feels sorry for herself. Maybe I notice that when Hannah and I hang out, I leave feeling drained and depleted. But because I don't want to hurt Hannah's feelings and I don't really feel like getting into a whole big thing, I dodge what might be an uncomfortable conversation by saying I can't because I have to do something else instead of sharing my truth and being honest with my friend. This is one of the more ubiquitous uses of can't slash have to in our culture. I guess we figure it's easier to disempower ourselves and deny our own agency than it is to show up honestly and integrously in our relationships. Can't and have to are like the mother load of toxic multitasking, allowing us to dodge responsibility for our choices and enable codependent relationship dynamics while disempowering us to victim consciousness. The intention informing this codependent linguistic evasion is, by and large, if you're watching and you're seeing me struggle holding the book, it's because another one of my injuries from my fall was I bashed my wrist really hard. So I'm just noticing it is very interesting to hold the book in this way so that you guys can see it. So thanks for rolling with me. Might look as awkward as it feels over here. Okay. The intention informing this codependent linguistic evasion is by and large compassionate and speaks mostly to the kindness of the human spirit. I say mostly because there is still the matter of our emotional immaturity and the corresponding reticence to share tough truths in our unconscious efforts to avoid discomfort. What it really boils down to is fear. Fear of conflict, fear of drama, fear of being disliked and misunderstood, and fear of losing our proverbial shit. Alas, the strategy is short-sighted, serving to corrode and distort our relationship dynamics while enabling everyone involved to stay stunted and small. The truly compassionate response is to be honest. It is to take responsibility for our own experiences while languaging our choices as choices, instead of pawning them off on imaginary tyrants and constraints. It is to acknowledge that we are utterly and completely 100% in charge of our time, our attention, and our calendars, and that everything we do or do not do is a choice. Still, there are indeed instances wherein we really do have prior commitments. What if I am scheduled to work? If there's a commitment that I've already made to my team, my clients, and my supervisor, how would I go about languaging this in such a way that I'm not disempowering myself to my calendar and my responsibilities? Great question, Rockstar. I'm sorry. Great question, superstar. Forgot my own catchphrase. Replacements abound while honesty and precision rock. I am a fan of telling people I'm already committed or I have other plans. If it's authentic, I add that I'd love to arrange for a rain check and suggest a couple alternate day and times to connect. Days and times to connect. In other instances, I let folks know that while I appreciate the invitation, I'm not feeling aligned with blank, whatever it is they have invited me to, or sometimes I'll simply say no thank you and leave it at that. All right, so there's a bit more in here, but I think that that's good enough for a can't. So in the instance of my client, in the instance of all of us, when we're leaning into can't because we don't want to hurt someone's feelings, is we're doing ourselves as speakers a disservice, right? We're pinning our own feet to the floor. So I go into this in depth in the language of betterarchy. There are frequency bands for every emotion or energy that we could possibly experience embedded in the morphogenetic field. I very often compare them to grooves in a record. And so the way it works, because we're in a constant feedback loop with the morphogenetic field and those frequency bands, and whichever frequency bands we resonate with, right, we activate through the coding embedded in our language, then the morphogenetic field knows, oh, give those experiences, give those energies and circumstances to the speaker, you know, seed the world at large with more of those. So when I say, I can't have dinner with you 8 nights in a row, right, which isn't true, I totally can do that. I don't want to. It feels like a drag. It feels like an obligation. I probably won't show up as my very best self. I think if I raise the desk, there might be less fidgeting. Maybe. We'll see how it goes. But when I move into, I'm not aligned with having dinner 8 days in a row, I'm really feeling like I would do well with some more alone time. So let's split those up. But when I lean into, I can't have dinner 8 nights in a row, then I am attuning myself to the frequency bands of victimhood and disempowerment, because victimhood and disempowerment are the frequencies that are encoded in the word can't. So even though saying I can't do dinner 8 days in a row is going to be fine in terms of the relational dynamic, right? And my hostess will understand and then it'll be off the table. What I've done at the same time is activate the frequency bands of victimhood and direct the morphogenetic field to give me more experiences wherein I can know myself as victim, because that's the frequency match that's being fostered when I utter the word can't. Pause for sip. Excited for this to not throb. So this is especially up for me. I mean, obviously I write these books. This is the world I'm embedded in every day. And it's really being driven home the deeper I get into Paul Levy's quantum revelation, because in the same way that I unpack language in such like a granular way, he's unpacking the quantum ontological nature of this realm in a similarly granular way. And it's reminding me there is no past, there is no future, there is only now, and there also is no singular objective reality, right? As observers, we're in a constant dance, a constant give and take, quantum entanglement with reality at large. And so these tiny little communication habits that are resonating with frequencies of disempowerment and victimization and limitation are having massive implications for how the rest of my own reality is going to unfold. So this is to encourage you and me and all of us to ditch the can'ts and to have the uncomfortable conversations. And this is the other piece of it that I want to talk about, is the willingness to be uncomfortable. It's one of, you know, there are many, but one of the downsides of 21st century convenience culture is we want what we want when we want it. We want it quick, we want it cheap, and we want to be comfortable, and we don't want to be uncomfortable. And this is, you know, we see this, of course, in the Western medical paradigm, where it's like, you know, look, I bash my tooth, it's throbbing, I could go take an aspirin. It's not really my style. It's not my vibe. I'm not going to do that. It's okay. I'm uncomfortable. It'll pass, right? But because we're not, we're so quick to avoid discomfort or to numb discomfort, or, you know, same with boredom, right? Like when we were kids, we were bored. We didn't have the screens, the computers, the smartphones, right? So we would exercise our creativity or make up games or read or meditate or connect with other people who were also waiting at the DMV, right? It was a completely different culture. But now, in the same way that we have zero tolerance for discomfort, we have zero tolerance for boredom, or it's not even boredom, it's just lack of stimulation. So we're in incessant stimulation and always chasing more and more comfort. And I don't think this is helping us. I really don't think this is helping us. You know, the way that I see this most in my world is A, of course, like sports and exercise. And then of course in the healing paradigm, right? I have been like hardcore full-time parasite cleansing since around Thanksgiving. And I'm only using natural herbs and oils and turpentine and things from nature, right? I'm not doing the ivermectin. I'm not doing any of those things. And so as anyone who's taken 100% responsibility for our health knows and is walking like as much of the natural path as possible, it takes longer And it's more uncomfortable because we're not numbing ourselves. Like there's a longer, in my mind, more natural, organic process going on. And not only do I think that's okay, I think it's so super empowering and developing of character. What I've learned from all of my health healing initiations in being with the discomfort, like I'm thinking of the time I was bit by a bullet ant, right? And if you know anything about ants and like the kind of intensity of bites, bullet ants are known for having the most painful bite of any insect on the planet. And I will pause for a sip and then I'll give you the story. I was in Puerto Viejo in Costa Rica, where I used to go a lot. And I hiked into the jungle with some of the kids to pick, I don't know, whatever the fruit was that we were going to bring back to our friend Vera, who was going to make something yummy with it. And so I'm carrying a machete and I'm with the kids and we're cutting down the fruit and I feel something biting me on the ankle. But you know how it is with bug bites? I'm like, okay, something just bit me. Like, there's nothing I can do about it. So I stay focused on the task at hand, but the pain is starting to intensify in this like utterly ridiculous way. And I'm like, wow, it's getting big. Like, how is this happening that it's getting more and more intense? And I look down and I see this thing like attached, this ant attached to my ankle. And now the pain is so bad that I just start laughing because that's my, when the pain threshold hits a certain place, I go into delirium and I just start laughing. So it was like, at first I was like, ah, I started like, yeah, like it was getting more intense. So I'm like, ah, and then I just started laughing. And then the kids are like, ooh, that's a bullet ant. So one of the kids grabs a machete out of my hand and he starts swatting at my ankle to get the bullet ant off me. And I'm like, yeah, I will, thank you, but I will take the machete. We don't need an amputation on top of this. There wasn't really much I could do except ride it out. And so I spent the next 6-7 hours in a hammock in such an intense amount of pain. And I was just in total silence. I wasn't reading, I wasn't distracting myself. I was just laying there and being with the pain. And that was a very powerful meditation. And I have learned quite a bit from pain in my lifetime, from being with pain and not just being with pain, but giving 100% of my attention to the pain and fully going into it instead of numbing the pain, instead of taking something to make the pain go away, instead of distracting myself from the pain by like inebriating myself, like none of those things, just being with pain. And I feel like there's so much value in that. And one of the many valuable gifts that I've gotten from this practice with pain is developing a tolerance for being uncomfortable. And I think that if we as a society had a higher tolerance for being uncomfortable, we would be in a much stronger, more empowering place. And I'm bringing it back to Kant and back to having uncomfortable conversations. I feel like our relationships would be in a stronger place and would be more, I'll just speak for myself. I trust people more when they're honest with me. I had a date back. So I mentioned my friend Ross on this podcast all the time. Ross and I are just very good friends, but Ross and I dated a bajillion lifetimes ago. And on our first date, it was -3 degrees. And he picked me up to take me to dinner. And he took off his hat at dinner, you know, his snow hat. And he said, how's my hair? And I said, great, how's mine? I took my head off and he goes, And I fell for him instantly. Like I loved that he was honest. It cracked me up to no end. Had he lied and said, your hair looks great when it didn't, I'm sure that would be more socially acceptable. But I also wonder if a part of me wouldn't have like felt the BS in that. So personally, and maybe I'm a weirdo here, but I prefer it when people are straight with me, even when what they're sharing is, no, I don't want to be around you 8 nights in a row. Like, I think 4 is all I can handle. I would prefer that than someone showing up for dinner 8 nights in a row with a bad attitude or holding something back, like in a state of withholding or sort of like contorted, distorted psycho-emotional presence. Or if they lie and say, yeah, I can't, when they can, but the truth is they don't want to. So I acknowledge that I could be the outlier here in preferring this kind of honesty. And I think our relationships would be much better served and will be much better served when we as a collective ditch these codependent communication tactics that only serve to disempower and victimize us, while like seeding the relationship with a bunch of disingenuous BS because we don't want to be uncomfortable, or we're assuming that someone else can't handle the truth. That's my two cents on that. Pause for another sip. All right, before I get into some of the spicier things in the social engineering and the customer service, I'm employing two new Word Up podcast segments. Make that three new podcast segments. Okay, it might be overkill to do every book every time, but what I was thinking was to do a really quick kind of oracle guided flip through of my various publications and give us a little like surprise grab bag live reading. So I know it's going to work great for Pop Propaganda and for Yes I Am, and I'm not sure how well it's going to work for Word Up, which is my first and most popular quantum languaging book. So let's just try it and we'll see if it works real quick. Okay. No, it's not going to work. All right, we tried that. No problem. And let's move on to Yes, I Am. So Yes, I Am, my new and improved, extra very colorable, transformational coloring book for kiddos, grownups, and adults was re-released in December of last year. It features more than 444 inspirational, intentional, confidence building, heart expanding images, and I thought that I would flip through Oracle style and see what we come up with. Ooh, I love this one. So there are two versions of this book, real quick. So this one is a bit thinner. Let's see if we can. Okay, so you can see this one is thinner than the OG version, and this is because to get expanded distribution into bookstores through Ingram versus KDP, I went through Ingram, and Ingram does not allow blanks on the backsides of the coloring book. So the Amazon version has blank on the backside because sometimes people like to color in pen, which bleeds through. So I wanted to have that blank backside, and that wasn't an option in Ingram. So I thought, all right, let's beta test the two versions and see what kind of feedback we get. So this one, because of the way I flipped, we get two images. So for those who are listening with your ears, the first one is a little form that says you are blank responsible for your reality. Choice A, 40%, choice B, sorta, choice C, 100%, choice D, none of the above. So the answer is obviously 100%. And there's a little figure on the bottom who says, yay, that means I can make my reality even radder than it already is. And then on the other page, because this is the Ingram two-sided page printing version, is a girl and it says opt for eye contact, it's more fun. Now, I want to be clear, just because I happen to randomly flip to two girl pages does not mean that this is a gender biased book. There are girls, there are boys, there are men, there are women, there are animals, there are all creatures in Yes I Am, which is available now. Okay, next up, I'm going to do the same for Pop Propaganda. Now, this is seeding the groundwork for me to be doing ad reads for aligned podcast sponsors. While those sponsors are still coming in, I'm sponsoring my own podcast with my book. So we'll do the same with Pop Propaganda, which is the textbook that I created to go with my Pop Propaganda digital media literacy course. And we'll see which of the 37 tools the propagandists use to attempt to manipulate us, I land on. Half-truths and lies. Half-truths and lies. Here we go. Edward Bernays, the godfather of propaganda, instructed would-be social engineers to tell some truth, but never the whole truth. Successful propaganda relies on half-truths, manipulated out-of-context truths, and flat-out lies to deceive the public into signing on to their agendas. Propaganda achieves its goals by any means necessary and cares not a single whit for ethics or morality. To this end, those who push propaganda are in the habit of twisting the facts, making stuff up, hiring crisis actors to pretend they're sick or wounded or traumatized or whistleblowers or podcasters to claim they were witnesses to crimes or ethical lapses. The propagandists will write an article comprised of 99% factual information with the sole intention of pushing a single falsehood to manipulate an entire nation planet. All right, I did not plan on landing on that one, and it is so perfect for where we're going next. You know what? It's so perfect for where we're going next. There are a couple other customer service and social engineering pieces I want to touch on before I get into the half-truths and lies that I just spoke about. So buckle up. We've got lots more. Lots more? Lots more. Buckle up. We've got lots more coming up. So I like to report on the weaponization of customer service, not only because it's a technique that's being used to slow frog boil, inch us closer and closer to techno-fascism, communism, etc. But also because I am still clear that the weaponization of customer service, as well as AI and automation, are the issues around which we can most easily unify as a populace because they're not partisan-based issues. So I'm going to continue to share these with you, because I feel like for you in your community and with the people you know, we can start sharing more and more of the shenanigans that we're seeing around the weaponization of customer service, share notes, and band together to stand against it. So what happened was I had made a new design, which you can find over on my Threadless shop. I will definitely include the link in the show, but my latest shirt design is Got Stockholm Syndrome, which I made a shirt with that design during lockdown, during COVID. And I decided to, again, apparently it's the year of new and improved. I decided to upgrade the version to the original Got Milk font just to make it extra uber on point and iconic. And so I was ordering a tote bag for myself so that I could advertise the product that's posted on one of these print on demand sites. And I went through the process of ordering it. I don't get a discount through the company as a creator. So I was paying full price. And when it came time to ship, it was like $9 shipping. And I thought, okay, that's absurd. So I called the customer service, which I've done at least a dozen times before with this company, to say, hey, I'm a creator. Could I get a promo code for free shipping for this product so I can sell them for you? So this was the first time that with this company, I got a representative who was in India. And I want to be clear, I mean, no disrespect to people in India. I love Indian people. I've been to India multiple times. I love that country. I love that culture. And it is a very different culture from A, North American culture, B, West Coast California culture, where we're not as entrenched in dogma and rules and process, and it's easier for us to make exceptions. That does it for the first half of today's solo podcast. As you are inspired to check out the second half, you can find that over on both my Locals and Patreon sites. At both communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus oodles of bonus content, plus that yummy, ooey, gooey, warm, fuzzy feeling that comes along with supporting someone whose work you love, you admire, you tune into, to keep on keeping on. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It's the best way that we can stay in touch, and it'll help you stay with me as I ultimately move off of all of the other sites. Also reminding you that I am speaking at the upcoming Confluence event in Bandera, Texas in May. This is going to be a fantastic event with powerful, freedom-loving, consciousness-expanding speakers and workshops and great music, and all of our tribe's going to be there. So be sure to join me. I have a registration link in the show description. So run, don't walk to register for Confluence. And I think that does it. Thanks so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.